This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
More minutes. That's all that remains. Manchester City and AC Milan have their respective league titles in their hands, but Liverpool and Inter are ready to pounce if either slips up. Outside the title races, Arsenal need a miracle to return to the Champions League, while the specter of relegation still looms large and promises dramatic curtain calls in the Premier League, Serie A, Liga, and La Liga. I'm LME alongside James Bench and Michael Lahoud, and we have a lot to get through. The Gigolasso weekend preview begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Gigolasso. Gigolasso pod on Twitter, youtube.com/Gigolasso, CBS Sports, and your CBS Sports app. You didn't hear it, but it took me about five attempts to say the introduction. I love Des Norris. He's Shakespeare with this stuff, but sometimes he really gives me a lot of headaches. Michael Lahoud, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine. Think I've started to recover from the jet lag from the recent honeymoon, and nothing like a Europa League final to get you back into the soccer mood.
Yeah, I don't feel sorry for you when you're talking about honeymoons and going to Greece and Fiji and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. James Bench, I'm not too happy about how the way that went. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm not too happy either. It's St. Tottenham's Day.
I know it's St. Tottenham's Day. That wasn't the problem. I can say St. Tottenham's Day. It's when I have to say it within this monologue. It was like I had to be John Nash. It was just too much for me. It was too much. It was a beautiful monologue. I never want to, you know, dilute the great work of Des Norris. It's just that sometimes, you know, it's a little. Hey, by the way, also, English is my second language. People forget that. All right. Let's move on, everybody. It's the final day of the season, of course. And as we mentioned in the intro, Premier League and Serie A is where it's at, as AC Milan, Manchester City, of course, fighting with Liverpool towards that Sunday title race. So we're going to begin there in the Premier League. I've got a lot of things to say, but I'm going to leave it at the end here as just to set you off. By the way, Manchester City lead Liverpool in the table by 1 point. Liverpool face Wolves, and you would expect a victory there at Anfield. They have to win and hope that Aston Villa get a draw or a win against Manchester City. And so, you know, this past week and a half, you know, my club has received a lot of bandwagoners coming on, jumping on. I've got a lot to say about that, but I'll wait until the end. James Bench, talk to me, buddy. Villa, Man City, Liverpool, Wolves. You can see the table right there. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, look, I can hope to Benjamin Button myself and start living my life in reverse. I can hope to wake up tomorrow and it's Christmas Day. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. And Liverpool fans, you can hope that Steven Gerrard does you a favour. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I think this feels exciting and feels like a big day. And of course, it is great, and credit to Liverpool for keeping pace with City and taking this down to the final day. But sadly, I kind of think this is where it ends. City are really good. Villa have had their moments. They're okay against Liverpool, which was kind of impressive because part of you thinks maybe Steven Gerrard will just want to do his former team a favour. But you know, these are the sort of teams that City have for breakfast. And I'm not just saying that to wind you up. I think this may end up feeling like something of a damp squib when we played about 20 minutes at the Etihad.
Ooh, I'm not too sure I'm ready to just concede that just yet, James. Aston Villa, as of late in the last five games, only lost one match. That was against Liverpool. And they're playing at home against Villa Park, which is a very difficult place to play. In their last two matches, they scored the first goal. Villa's biggest problem hasn't been scoring goals. They switched to a diamond midfield, which typically you do that as a manager if you want to get your best midfielders on the field, which happen to be all center midfielders, and to get your best player on the field, Philippe Coutinho, in his natural position, attacking mid. If you're Manchester City, there's nothing like a game like this that you don't want any part of, which is an Aston Villa who is motivated, who has three people, the manager, who is an inspirational sort of manager. Philippe Coutinho, Danny Ings. I just think there's just something about this, the way that Liverpool's season has gone, where everything has fallen their way. You look at the FA Cup final, where you can't say that that was a final that they dominated, but they did just enough to win. The last couple games, they've done just enough to win. But to City's credit, I just 24 goals in their last six games. It's really hard to bet against them in the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you say at the end. That's the kind of the reality of the situation. Yes, it would be great for Gerrard and Coutinho to play spoiler. It'd be, you know, nice for those guys that didn't win a title with Liverpool to lend a helping hand. But it's just about, you know, a mid-table Premier League team who have got better. There will be occasions, I'm sure, where I can have a go at Aston Villa about their transfer policy, which I think is very high risk and is going to set them up to be a new Everton within 2 or 3 years. But that aside, it just, you know, these games on the final day of the season, when one team doesn't have anything to play for beyond pride and a few million quid, and the other team has everything to play for, and that team is Manchester City, who take mid-table teams to the cleaners. I think we will be kind of saying within 20 minutes or 30 minutes, title race is gone. That's not like a criticism of Villa per se. I would be saying the same thing to you if this was Brighton, if this was you know, any sort of mid-table team that don't have anything to play for compared to what City have to play for. I know they can wobble against big top-tier opposition in big games, but these are the sort of matches where they are very efficient. They get the job done. They've been playing great of late and showed some real fighting spirit to come back from two goals down against West Ham. So I just don't see us getting a real title race on the final day.
Yeah, let me just jump in here as we move on, okay? First of all, obviously, it's great to see the fact that the title race goes all the way to the last day of the season. Man City just leading by a point. And you could see a situation where, you know, especially because all games are playing simultaneously, Liverpool take that lead against Wolves very early on. It's still a draw, right, between City and Villa. And that's, you know, that could be interesting because, you know, on the life table, they'll be like, oh, dramatically, oh, look, Liverpool's jumped above. What's going to happen? All right. The second part I want to say, by the way, is, and James Bench, I'm going to ignore your Everton transfer policy thing. I'm just going to swiftly move on there. But the thing that I do want to say, though, is this. First of all, I just want to set something straight. I love the fact that all these fans that don't want Man City to win are jumping on the Villa bandwagon. They're jumping Steven Gerrard and Coutinho. It's very nice. Thank you so much. Welcome to disappointment. Because let me just remind you of a few statistics. Against Manchester City, we've played them about 8 times since 2016. They've won every single time. Over the course of the record of the Premier League, Man City have a tremendously overwhelming winning record. So this is not going to be a very intriguing matchup when it comes to that. I am not putting any hope there. Now, I hope that we give him a battle. I hope that we do well. By the way, we're taping this before Villa have to face Burnley, so I hope there's no injuries in that situation. You mentioned Felipe Coutinho, Michael Ahoud, Emiliano Buendia has actually been the most influential player as of late. We have a lot of talent, but against this Man City side, I'm not hoping too much. However, and this is where I ended. However, okay, thank you for all you fans that are jumping on Villa. I have a request for you. If you really want this to happen, if you really think it can happen, let's set some good vibes to the energy. I set you a challenge. You need to remember Learn by Trade, Learn by Heart, our Coutinho song, and sing it to me by Sunday. Send it to me on video, send it to me on email. If you don't know how it goes, this is how it goes. It's to Salt and Peppers, Push It, okay? Are you ready? He went to Barca and won the league in Spain. He went to Munich. He did the same again. He's fucking magic. And don't you fucking know his name's Felipe Coutinho. Da, da, da. Learn that by Sunday. Learn it. Send it to me on Twitter. Send it to me. And if we, the entire nation, just sings that, maybe we'll get something against Man City. Aside from that, I don't think so.
It's no John Lundstrom chant, I'll tell you that.
I tell you what, LME, if that doesn't make triple platinum by the end of Sunday's match, I'm going to be pissed.
I got to be honest, it's one of the best chants we've ever done. I really think
I'm very impressed. Very impressed. I didn't know what was going to happen. but I like that.
I'm telling you, it's good. All right. But listen, I'm with James, though. I think Man City's winning this, James, and they will win the title. It could be interesting for about 15 minutes, especially because I think Liverpool might take the lead against Wolves. But then I think Man City will overall take it. So you see, James Benj, in the end, Man City winning this Premier League title.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think maybe we haven't really hit on the Liverpool game quite as much. I would say
that let's do it.
That's even more of a game where I'm, if I could be more certain, I'm more certain that Liverpool will beat Wolves. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of feels like for the last few months or whatever, they've been playing in flip-flops, and Jose Sarr's been doing the business for them to just keep them earning the odd point here or there. But yeah, Wolves are done. I can't believe somehow that they're still eighth. So I think your scenario may be kind of how it plays out, that you have both teams scoring early, but maybe Liverpool even earlier still. But yeah, I think this will kind of peter out quite early on, which will allow us to focus on some of the other fun bits.
I'm going to put a wrinkle in this. I think City will win. I definitely agree with you. But for this Liverpool match, because of the injury woes and some of the injury scares that they have, and a small game that they have, probably the smallest game in the world, the Champions League final the following weekend, that you will be at, James Benj, which that's awesome. But I think because of that game, you're probably not going to see the Mohamed Salahs. You're not going to see the Virgil van Dijks. Fabinho coming back from a hamstring injury. A lot of players, they're going to start thinking about that match, and they want to be fresh. They want to be healthy. And I just wonder if, as the match goes on, and say that City, they pounce early, and the match is just a foregone conclusion, if the players just focus, peters out, and then Wolves get a win. It may not stand for anything, but I think it could be a tricky match for Liverpool just because of the fact that they have something bigger to play for if they don't win the Premier League.
Nah, Wolves are not doing anything here. I'm sorry. They drew 1-0 against Norwich. They got lucky in that Chelsea game, I think, to get that result. They got destroyed by Man City. I'm with James Benj. It's been kind of amazing to see the fact that they're still so high up. But you never know. You never know. Tell us what you think. Tweet us, Gigolasso Pod. All right, let's move on. Let's stay in the Premier League, of course. All right, St. Tottenham's Day. There you go. Oof. No St. Tottenham's Day. All right, Norwich, they host Tottenham. And Arsenal host Everton. And, you know, well, James, straight away, man, just give me your reaction overall over the course of this week leading up to this weekend. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's been Arsenal have come crashing down to earth to a pretty significant degree. Obviously, in January, they gambled that a small squad just playing in the Premier League could get them across the line. And had Thomas Partey and Kieran Tierney got injured, and I think that started putting pressure elsewhere in the squad, had those players stayed fit, you know, maybe they would have got across the line. In the end, you know, it really told, I thought, against Spurs that they didn't have the quality in every position. Some players looked like they were just hanging on. I think add Partey to it, add Tierney, even add, you know, a fully fit centre-back at Newcastle, and they might have got somewhere. And the reason I'm kind of talking about this in the past is I just cannot imagine a world in which Norwich, who have won, I think, one game since the 5th of February, I think they've won one game, and that was against Burnley. I cannot see a world in which Norwich beat Tottenham. I could have imagined them getting a point. If Arsenal had just come away from St. James's Park with a point, you could have said maybe that's possible. And look, you know, frankly, if there's any team in the Big Six that I would trust to kind of blow it on the final day against a team that's already relegated, it is Spurs. I remember what happened against Newcastle back in 2016. And I do think there is still some fragility in this squad, but not kind of enough. And even then, I think you kind of need Arsenal to beat Everton. Obviously, we're recording this on Thursday, so we don't know how the relegation picture will look, whether Everton are going to be completely safe. But, you know, this knackered squad. I don't think you'll see Gabriel and Ben White as well. I think Arsenal feel like it's gone. So no St. Tottenham's Day again. I don't think that ruins some of the credit that Arsenal should get for this season. Fifth is better than most of us would have expected at the start of the season, but it is a disappointing end and one that shows the areas they need to address in the summer.
I never thought I'd say this as a United fan, but I was really disappointed in Arsenal in the way they finished this season. And I'm not going to take the Mickey. I'm really trying hard not to go ham on Arsenal after that Newcastle match. So I'll just be professional about it. They were crap against Newcastle. And it was so disappointing to see when you do all that work and just Mikel Arteta, and I agree with you, Benj, with just what he's done with this young team to get players that are from the Arsenal DNA, from the academy, Saka, Emil Smith Rowe, Odegaard, the season these young players have had, to go into a match like that where destiny's in your hands.
Was it that they were crap, Michael, or do you give a little credit to Newcastle? Because
I think it's a combination of both. I think Newcastle, they bullied them throughout the field and they put the game on their terms. And from there, you still have to show up. And it's just kind of a little bit more of the old Arsenal, but with younger players in that.
I think this is just what young players do. I think we kind of jam it into an Arsenal narrative because it makes sense and because it's true that under Arsene Wenger, these things did happen quite a lot. But this is a different team, and you know, a team that we've seen show fighting spirit. I think part of it is just, you know, it kind of put me in mind, although I would never expect the same level of success, it made me think a little bit of, you know, those early runs for, say, the Chicago Bulls in the NBA playoffs, where they come up against a bigger, meaner, more experienced team and just get bullied. And that's what happened against Spurs. And then because it carries over because they're young, because they can't get out of their heads. And I think there's a lot
to put on Saka, expecting him to deliver every single time, Emile Smith-Rowe, etc. And I do think the steps are there. You see the development from Mikel Arteta's side. It's just maybe perhaps hoping for a definite Champions League spot, Michael Lahoud, was maybe a little bit too much. I think Europa League is a decent place for Arsenal to be in, and hopefully they can move on from this. But I guess where it lies in the disappointment is the fact that it came so close, right? It came so close. It wasn't like this was defined like a few months ago. This is literally, it was in their grasp. And to your point, they were disappointing against Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, like I said, the if you're an Arsenal fan, the disappointment comes with, I don't care if your players are 17, 16, 15, these are very good young players. These are players that play for their national team that were fixtures in the Euros, that are fixtures in the World Cup qualification. And what they've done is incredible to get to this point, but you have to reward yourself. You have to reward yourself. And yes, there's building blocks, but they blew it. They went against their direct rivals and didn't show up for that game. Yes, a red card changes the game. And then you go on the road and then you put even more pressure on yourself. And look, this is football. And that's what makes the Premier League a beautiful league, is the fact that it's not safe until the final day, and the drama will always be there. And to switch over to Spurs, I don't think they're going to bottle this. I think Antonio Conte has his team playing with just this sort of definitive confidence that, hey, we're going to do what the game demands and we're going to step up. It's our time to seize fourth place. I fully expect Tottenham Hotspurs to get fourth and Arsenal to remain in fifth.
Yeah, well, we will see. I did want your thoughts, James Mensch, on Shaka's comments regarding after that game. He said, we didn't do what the game plan was, not listening to the coach, doing our things. And when you do your things, these games happen. What happened was a disaster performance. And playing like this, you don't deserve the Champions League. You don't even deserve to play in the Europa League.
I did not think they were entirely helpful at that time. I don't think anyone in the dressing room needed to be told that. I think they all knew that. And obviously, this is one of the most senior players. I know he's had been stripped of the armband in the past, but you know, he's a captain around the squad, everyone tells me, and someone that the young players look up to. I don't know. I mean, it's hard because I think a lot of Arsenal fans actually really liked hearing someone give the unvarnished truth. My feeling is that, like, you don't need, you know, who, if this message is aimed at the one that the players will absorb, and it was interesting, I think they will also absorb what Gary Neville said after it, which was that he thought Xhaka was digging out some of the younger players. And I certainly did get the feeling that it was something that everyone could take criticism in, and it felt more global than like kind of Xhaka talking about himself. I don't necessarily see that as being beneficial. I think, you know, the message I would want to hear from Arteta, who did the same as well, and from Xhaka, is we're going to learn from this. We will come back stronger. We will keep this with us. This is going to be a really tough formative moment for Arsenal. And potentially this could be the moment that we look back on in 3 years' time ago. That's how they became a perennial Champions League team and maybe better. Or it could be the moment that crushes the spirit of some of these players. And I fear that comments like that tilt the scales towards it being a crushing blow that Arsenal can't recover from at the start of next season.
Well, especially to the narrative that we were just talking about, that Arsenal is a young team. Of course, I'm specifically focusing on the beginning of that paragraph, Michael Lahoud, when he says, we didn't do what the game plan was, not listening to the coach. That's interesting to me. Maybe youthful naivety. I don't know. What do you think?
I think I agree with Benj. That's a dig. And I'm just going on personal experience. As a young player, when I started my career, I hated when the elder statesmen, when the veteran players who've done big things would go to the media and have a dig like that. I think with the fact that you still have something to play for going into the final game of the season, that is not what you want one of your leaders to do. And Granit Xhaka is a leader of this team. Whether he has the armband on or not, he's a big personality. His presence is infectious. When he decides to use it on the field, you see the benefits of it as an Arsenal fan, and the Arsenal players, they galvanize around a player like that. And for him to just ooze out his frustration, I think that is a just misdirected frustration at the bigger issue, which is they didn't get the job done in the last two matches. And the frustration and the pressure, it builds as you're playing for Champions League, as you're playing for contracts next year, as you're playing for just the biggest prizes around the world. But I'd expect a little bit better just reaction from Granit Xhaka, because the season's not completely over. Anything can still happen on the final day. And now you've put your team half a step back mentally with a comment like that.
Yeah. The only thing that I'll just say is give him a little bit of slack. It was right after the game. I'm imagining that, you know, he just, you know, I'm going back to when Lionel Messi said he'll never play football again after losing.
He can, you know, from experience, I mean? He can be like that. Exactly. I have experience when he has sworn at me in mix zones. He can be like that. And that's not a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing. But you are right, Luis, that's how that message came across.
Yeah. So, you know, but yes, I think it's a very good point, especially in the situation that Arsenal are in right now. All right. Well, let's do quick predictions then on what happens on Sunday. Then Michael Lahoud, as we look, obviously Tottenham have full control. You see Tottenham holding on to that Champions League spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Their best players are scoring their goals. They're doing what they're paid to do. Give the ball to Harry Kane anywhere from midfield towards the end line or the goal line, and good things will happen. Sun Yung-min doing his thing, fully expect Spurs to take full advantage.
See, I think this might be more fun or exciting for the neutral viewer. So I'm going to tell you, in the 70th minute, I think Arsenal will be 2-0 up against Everton, and it will be 0-0 at Carrow Road. And then around then, Son
70th minute. You really see a 0-0 at Carrow Road, 70th minute.
And then around then, that's Son, when go off. Harry Kane will go off. They'll win 2-3-0. Arsenal will get relayed to the pitch somehow, and they will end up drawing 2-2.
Yeah,
that's my prediction.
Yeah, the fun things of the final day of the season, of course. All right, very quick on the relegation. I know we should go longer, but we got a lot to discuss. So let's just quickly break it down, everybody. Norwich are done. Obviously, Watford are done. So it's between, you know, Burnley, Leeds, Everton in 16th place, of course. By the way, we're taping this again before Thursday's matches, so that has a lot of incentive as well. But, you know, I'm specifically looking at Leeds, really, just because they're the ones that don't play on Thursday. Michael Lahoud, who, if you were to take a wager here, Burnley still have to face Aston Villa on Thursday. So, you know, there's that part as well. And, you know, we've already talked about Everton, who before Arsenal, they play Crystal Palace on Thursday as well. What would you think will happen towards the end of the day on Sunday, and who will be that third team to go down?
I've had this feeling in my gut for a while now, since the woes started on the blue half of Merseyside, and the feeling hasn't changed. And it almost changed with their almost recent result, where I thought they were going to get the 3 points. But when that final whistle blew, I tell you what, Everton are going down. I just think...
Well, I mean, remember, this is going before the game against Palace. So everybody take that. If you're watching or listening to this on Friday and Everton win against Crystal Palace, all right, let's let's tone it down. But you see Everton losing both games.
The game against Palace is a very tricky game.
Yeah, they're Patrick a very Vieira, good team, Crystal Palace.
Patrick Vieira will have them ready to go. And if they play Palace and they don't get the win, now you're physically fatigued and you're fighting for your Premier League lives going into the weekend. And I think if they played anyone else, Crystal Palace, they will show up for the game. They've done that. They've been a resurgent team in the second half of the season. And I just think that's just too tricky of a matchup to finish the season. And then obviously the last game of the season, you're playing against a team that is playing for a lot on the line. Two teams that will show up that I just can't see them. You know, it's always possible in football, but I just think this might be the year.
So I have Leeds going into the final day in the bottom three. I think both Everton, Burnley, I think we'll get something from Villa. Everton, I'm a little bit more optimistic than Mike. I saw them against Watford. I wish I hadn't seen them against Watford. I wish I could have clawed my own eyeballs out to make that game stop. It was horrible, but it was effective. Like, that's what you need at this stage of the season if you're battling relegation. You go away and you take a point, and at home you make it a fortress and you win your games. And I think that's probably what Lampard has got to now. So functionally, Leeds are basically a point down because their goal difference is atrocious. And I just then can't see that turning on the final day. Their final game is not a simple one against Brentford. I think there's a fair bit of needle between those two teams, but dating back to the Championship days, and there'll be players like Pontus Janssen in the Brentford team that will be pretty up for spoiling the party. And Brentford, of course, will want to end their final game of the first season in the Premier League on a high. So although I think Jesse Marsh has done a fantastic job, given where he came in, I just think this might not be the day for Leeds. And I think they might be the ones to go down.
Yeah, so Leeds United is my team, unfortunately, that I think going down as well. You know, we've talked about it a lot here in this show. It's not all of Jesse Marsh's fault. Of course not. He came in pretty late, and the goal differential by that point was already disastrous. And the problem is when you take over a team like Marcelo Bielsa's, you know, even though Jesse Marsh is kind of similar to the Bielsa system, the biggest problem for Leeds has always been to be good off the ball defensively, and that just hasn't been rectified. And to your point, James, they're now playing they're traveling to a Brentford side who want to end it on a high. They've had a great rookie season in the Premier League. Christian Eriksen, the numbers I'm looking at here, how he does at home specifically, are fantastic. You know, it's going to be tough. And because they don't have that extra game, regardless of what happens on Thursday, I see Leeds going down. And, you know, that it will be, you know, sad, but I don't know, too little too late to, you know, saying goodbye to Bielsa. Jesse Marsh, the wrong person. I don't know what it is. I just know that, you know, two straight red cards in the last two games as well didn't help anything as well.
And the one thing I would specifically say, because we do talk about that, there are levels of dead rubber. And I think for Brentford specifically, there is the prospect of a top half finish, which is
amazing for Thomas.
Yeah. I think that, you know, almost, you know, I don't think you can motivate players by saying, look, every place is worth another £2 million to the club. But I think if you say to players, you can prove on the final day of the season that you are in the top 10 teams in England, that will motivate players to play well. I'm no doubt of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break here, everybody. And when we come back, Serie A conversation, because it's not just England where a title race is up for grabs in the final day. We'll also talk the relegation battle there as well, because it's also tasty there as well. A little bit on La Liga, because there's a relegation conversation, of course. Some Liga, a little thought on the Women's Champions League final, by the way, Barcelona against Lyon. Final thoughts, and that will be it. Que golazo weekend preview. Michael LeHoux, James Bench, LME. We'll be right back.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. and our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Qué Golazo Weekend Preview. Let's get into it. Serie A, down to the wire. AC Milan feeling very confident. Inter Milan feeling very hopeful. But, you know, they already have Coppa Italia, so it's not completely disastrous for Simone Inzaghi. I think that's commendable. Remind everybody that it's been a pretty good season, especially after Antonio Conte. But in Serie A standings, the race for Scudetto, Milan, they travel to sexy Sassuolo. By the way, they're 2 points above Inter, and Inter host Sampdoria. My God. I mean, pretty cool that it goes all the way down to the final day, Michael Lahoud. I had AC Milan to win this whole thing at the beginning of the season. Perhaps it was just fortune because I've been wrong in so many other ways. But AC Milan looking good for it. What do you think?
5 straight wins is a pretty good trajectory to be on going into the last day of the season. And I mean, some of their trickiest games coming into it, they had a tough schedule, a tough run-in, but they've done the business. And it's the fact that different people are stepping up. But the guy who seems to have found his goal-scoring boots again at the right time, Leal. I was so happy to see him score. A guy who I think is a star in the making, a star on the rise, Portuguese international. And for AC Milan, their good side, it's left side, strong side with Leal and Theo Hernandez, who's been a revelation since moving to Italy. Sassuolo, though, they're so tricky. They're very good at home. And they're a team that pushed a Juve team. They got the first goal in that match. And if it wasn't for a red card, it could have been 6-1, half a dozen the other. So I think this is going to be a match that could go down to the wire. But I do see Milan, because of their momentum, because the fan base, because the players, because everyone outside of Inter want them to win this match. I'm just making that up. But because I think because really they've earned it.
Yeah.
I mean, what a fantastic conclusion as well to have a city divided. It really beats the Northwest divided of the Premier League. I mean, looking at it from an Inter perspective, I think they will be pretty confident they can get the job done at home to Sampdoria. I mean, Lautaro Martinez is really hitting a rich vein of form, much like Leao. And I wonder, you know, I mean, again, we kind of were talking about this a little bit in relation to the Premier League top four. I wonder how cognizant players really are on these sort of final day title races of what's going on elsewhere, of the scoreboard pressure. Because you kind of need to think that this could be a weapon in your arsenal if you're Inter Milan, who I think are more the team that's more likely to kind of run out into an early lead. Mm. I mean, Sassuolo, not a huge amount to play for. They haven't, as Mike says, they are good at home, but they haven't been great home and away of late. I think it's 1 win in 5, but they could, they're the sort of team that it takes a while to break down. It takes a while to beat. And if while Milan are trying to do that, they know that Inter are 2-0 up on Samp and Inter have done everything they can. I think that's where it gets tricky for the title race. You know, I mean, it does put one in mind, doesn't it? The 2012 Premier League, which obviously we remember how that went. And I wouldn't say no to something similar. And I feel like Serie A has provided us so much drama that seems eminently plausible. But Yeah, I think big thing for me, Inter, go out there and get your game won and kind of hope that from afar, Milan are starting to worry, are starting to get inside their heads a bit. That's, I think, how Inter win the title, at least.
This is what one of the things I'm just so happy to have is one, Serie A, the fact that Serie A is so competitive again, and there's a lot to play for, not just for the title, but you look throughout the table, there's still European spots to play for. I think of, you know, the Europa League, Roma, and who's behind them, Fiorentina as well. But with focus on this match, I'm going to pick a storyline for you. Just dream with me. Close your eyes, meditative exercise, breathe, sip a cup of coffee. It's 89 minutes. Inter Milan are up 2-0. They're celebrating. The Nerazzurri, the fan base, the flares are popping. Enter a one, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Yeah. You knew I was going there. Corner kick from the left-hand side.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, waits, I do see rises, that happen.
Bang. Game set,
I definitely see a situation where, like, everything is decided literally in the final minutes of both games. But to both your points, it won't be easy. By the way, Sassuolo, yeah, nothing to play for, but they, I guess a top half finish is something that they're definitely aiming for. By the way, 29 of Sassuolo's 37 Serie A fixtures so far this season have seen 3 goals or more, while their past 4 meetings with Milan have been similarly high scoring, like about a bet over about 2.5 goals wouldn't be too bad to expect goals in this one. So I wonder if it's like, you know, 1-0, 2-0. And then to your point, Michael Lahoud, at the very end, Ibrahimovic gets that winner. It'd be kind of incredible. All right. What do you think everything, what do you see happening then, Michael Lahoud? And then Bench, you jump in. What do you see AC Milan winning the Scudetto for the first time in, what is it, almost 10 years?
Yeah, it's been too long. I think AC Milan get the job done. And, you know, I don't know if I need to go to a Hindu temple, the mosque or wherever, but I'm going to put those, I'm going to manifest those Ibra vibes so we can go out on the high. Always been a fan of the Lion. And I think AC Milan, there's just a feel good factor about them. The fact that Inter dropped that game in hand, and just the tables turned in their favor, that doesn't usually happen to this experienced Inter Milan team. I think that just, there's just too much of just the good stuff, the gold dust in Milan's favor.
Yeah. As much as I've spent forever talking about how this might get, you know, and I love Mike's storyline, although, to be honest, I think it'd be funnier if Zlatan rises for that corner, karate kicks it and shanks it over the bar. I think
or hits somebody and gets sent.
Yeah. But more likely to actually get a red card.
There's a full John Lundstrom and gets sent off.
Exactly.
I think this Milan team have proven in the last 4 or 5 games that they actually have the sort of mental qualities, as well as obviously the undoubted technical ones, that they should do the business in a fairly comfortable fashion.
Yeah. I agree. I think AC Milan will hopefully win that Scudetto. All right, very quickly, relegation battle, by the way. Venezia, 20th. Genoa, 19th. Cagliari, 18th. Salernitana, 17th. I mean, it's tight. I mean, if you look at that, Salernitana, 31 points. Cagliari, 29. And Genoa and Venezia have already been relegated. Cagliari have to host Venezia, who are already going down. And Salernitana, a trickier fixture, I guess, hosting Udinese, who are in 12th as
not
well.
Not for Salernitana, it's not.
Not for Salernitana, that's right. You say they're staying as it is.
Oh, you could get like the FIFA World 11.
Salernitana are winning this. It's kind of amazing.
The Monstars of Premier League, of world football.
Yeah.
All their powers and Salernitana are winning.
So you're making a Salernitana staying. I mean, the romanticism of this story continues. They'll stay in Serie A.
Yes. And look, I mean, like what they need to do is like ask Serie A very politely if they can just carry on and play their games for next season, starting next week.
No break, keep going.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. This team has been on a tear in 2022, especially in the last 2 months. It's as if I don't even know what to compare it to. The Space Jam analogy is probably one of the greatest analogies I've ever heard of in the past 24 hours. James Benz. So I'm not going to take any gloss away from hours. That.
He just woke up, by the way. James
Oh, I'm still on Fiji time. No. Salernitana, they're gonna do the business. Fully expecting.
Amazing. Well, Salernitana and Udinese have never drawn in Serie A, by the way. After two victories for Bianconeri in 98-99, Salernitana won the reverse fixture, but they've never drawn. So you should expect either a win or a loss in this one. But I'm with you all. Salernitana should get this one going. All right, let's quickly discuss La Liga. There's another relegation battle here. Who's going down, Michael Lahoud? Cadiz, Mallorca, or Granada?
Oh, I don't know why. I just have a soft spot for Mallorca. I think selfishly because it's one of my next vacation spots for this offseason. So I really would like to go to La Liga game there to introduce my missus to La Liga. But on a footballing side, I think I'm going to say Cadiz solely because, one, the draw that they got against Real Madrid, they got against a Real Madrid team that has their eyes fully set on the UEFA Champions League final. And that is not your typical Madrid side.
It probably took a lot of them, right, to get that result. So,
And it's one of those smoke and mirror sort of results. Yes, it gives you a sense of belief, but when you're playing against a team that isn't really doing 100% of who they are, can you really be as confident going in the final game of the season? So I'm picking Cadiz. Great place to vacation too, by the way.
I mean, all of Spain is.
Oh yeah.
I have to confess, I just got completely distracted. But it is Spanish related. One of my friends has just texted me that the lineups for Barcelona Music Festival Primavera have just dropped. So this is like live me experiencing.
So you're psyched all over. Well, it is Spanish related, so that's
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the relegation race in La Liga. But let's be frank. If I'd been paying attention, would I be able to offer much more? Probably not.
Well, I'll give you some tidbits regarding Alaves against Cadiz. If anybody has any venture of perhaps opting with Cadiz to stay above. Alaves have, at home, Alaves have not won any of their last five matches against Cadiz, so that could help them out a little bit, but I'm with you. I think it's going to stay as is. All right. A little bit more on Ligue 1, by the way, just a little bit of an update. There's a race for second, of course. PSG already, done the job. What else is new? But Monaco, they travel to Lens, and Marseille host Strasbourg as well. That's pretty big because obviously Strasbourg, fighting for a little bit of a European football here. Anything to add here? And by the way, in relegation, Metz, they travel to PSG, and Saint-Etienne, they travel to Nantes. And Jonathan Johnson said it a few episodes ago, the shame about Bordeaux, they have such a tremendous history, not just domestically, but from a continental perspective. And my God, to see them bottom the table down, it's pretty remarkable. But any thoughts on French football, James Benj? Are you going to any few music festivals in France? Well, you're going to Paris for the Champions League, so already that's one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Marseille story has been quite an interesting one. They've obviously made real strides, I think it's fair to say, this season, going to the semi-finals of the Conference League. And I think adding the ribbon of second place, as much as Marseille doubtless will not be happy finishing that behind PSG, I think that would be a sign of real progress and will matter to them. I mean, as Jonathan said, though, you hear those names down at the bottom. Saint-Etienne are a great, great name, one of the iconic names in French football. Metz as well is one we all know very well in England for the players they produced in the 90s and 2000s. So it's strange to see them fighting away. I can't imagine Ligue 1 without them. But yeah, I mean, if Marseille can get a favour from Monaco, I think it'd be quite a great end to the season for them if they could clamber up into second.
I've been so impressed with Monaco's ability to just stay near the top of the table, given the players that they lost only, was it 5 years ago, 6 years ago? Mm. Look at the talent that they've amassed, that they've brought through, shipped out, and now are replenishing. And I'm this is the most biased part of the show for me because I'm always looking for Manchester United transfer targets. And half of them are probably on Monaco's team. But one of the players that I really enjoy watching when I watch Monaco is Ben Yedder. I think what an underappreciated, undervalued, one of the most undervalued strikers throughout Europe.
Yeah,
what he's done consistently over the past couple of years. As he goes, this Monaco team goes. And this season, that's been a very good thing. I expect him to put Monaco on his back and get second place. For Marseille, I think it's been, yes, do you give him plaudits for pushing to get second? Yes, but the real disappointment is going to come in what they did in European competition. I thought they were going to be a team that was going to make it to the final. And should they not make it to the Conference League final and also not get second place, that'd be a very disappointing season for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's finish up here. In the Women's Champions League final, fantastic stuff. Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern in Turin, by the way. Barcelona Femini, the Goliath that is Barcelona Femini. They won every single game in the Spanish League. They scored, I don't know, 5,000 goals, and they only conceded 11. They are an absolute machine. So talented, so well coached. And they face Lyon, who are no slouches, of course. And they're leading also the French League. But after the final, the following weekend, they have to play PSG as well. They lead the table by 5 points. I mean, this is just a cracking game. Arguably the two best women's sides in Europe facing against each other. Perhaps Chelsea, Man City can say something about that next season. But for now, it's Barcelona Femini against Lyon. By the way, tickets starting at 10 euros, Jane's Bench. How great is that?
I mean, that is fantastic. And I think, frankly, you know, as much as one doesn't want to criticize, you know, go too deep on men's football in a segment about women's football, it's something that, you know, the big finals in the men's game could learn from. And I have no doubt the atmosphere will be improved for allowing fans who can, you know, who aren't spending thousands of pounds to go there. I mean, look, this Barcelona team, as you said, I mean, one of the best in Europe is probably an understatement. I mean, you could make an argument this is the best club side in the sport right now. Yeah. I mean, the goal difference they've ended the season on is over 100. I was lucky enough to see them in the group stages against a really good Arsenal team who at the time were competing for WSL. And obviously they took that to the title day. And it wasn't even close. You know, this team is on another planet. And it's great to see in Spain and beyond that they're starting to get the plaudits they deserve. I'll confess to not having seen quite as much of Lyon. But, you know, if they're even going to make a game out of this, Lyon are going to be a very good team because this Barcelona team is phenomenal.
Yeah, well, Lyon have not lost a game in the league. They've won 19, drawn once, and their goal, I mean, it's not as emphatic as Barcelona Femenil, but they've scored 74 goals. They've only conceded 8. So they're very good. But this is, like you said, James Bench, I would go and dare and say that this Barcelona Femenil side of this season, one of the best ever. They're just so good. Obviously, you know, they have to conclude it, Michael Lahoud, with a Champions League title. Should be a good one.
What I love about this matchup is go back, we're going French history soccer to end this show. But it was only a couple of years ago that Lyon, they were the best women's team, and they were the dominant force in Europe, winning Champions League title after Champions League title. And this matchup I see really as a potential changing of the guard in European soccer. For the women's side, Barcelona taking the mantle, have the opportunity to take the mantle and really be that force and continue to be that force. But even at the highest level at the women's game internationally, I think of the implications that this could have. For that Lyon side, what you saw was an uptick, not just for Lyon, but for the French women's national team. They became a power as the Lyon side got strengthened, and now the French women's team are one of the world forces for women's soccer. Could this be the mantle that Spain and the jump that the Spanish women's national team now get because they have a Barcelona side that is a force to be reckoned with? I really hope so, because that's going to make the Women's World Cup that much more exciting.
Yeah, I'm really glad you went there, because that's where I was thinking. I'm hoping that Spain in 2023 Women's World Cup are going to absolutely kill it. It's not just obviously Barcelona Femení have international players, but you also have, you know, Alexia Putellas, Jenny Hermoso, like all these players that are so good. So it should be an interesting caveat to what can happen in 2023 in the Women's World Cup. Barcelona Femini wins this, everybody? Is that what we're... Yeah?
Yes. I mean, all that to say, yes.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. All right. Well, that is it, everybody. That's our Qué Golazo weekend preview. Thank you so much for being part of the family. Don't forget to follow us, Qué Golazo Pod, on Twitter, youtube.com/Qué Golazo. Final thoughts before we say goodbye. James Bench, final thoughts. Anything that you want to just bring up before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the action we've been talking about is going to be either Saturday night European time or mostly on Sunday. If anyone's looking for some earlier football on Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, to be precise, we have the League One playoff final. League Two playoff final is Friday night, I think. But the League One is the one I'm really looking forward to. Sunderland against Wickham Wanderers. Wickham literally, you know, I mean, you'd have to throw it quite hard, but a stone's throw away from Wembley Stadium against Sunderland, who are going to sort of decamp en masse. If it's anything like last time they were in a final at Wembley, London will be a sea of red and white. You know, these guys are going far to make this, and there will be a lot of them. And I know that will mean an awful lot to a lot of Sunderland fans if they can finally start getting on the upswing, get out of League One, get up into the Championship. Mad credit to you as well. I saw that there's a guy who is flying from Sunderland to Mallorca and then flying back to London just so he can be at his team's game. So is going to be phenomenal.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I remember doing the review for Sunderland Till I Die back when I was with Sports Illustrated, and I talked to some of the players and the creators and stuff. And it was amazing because that documentary was meant to be about Sunderland's triumphant return to the Premier League from the Championship. But it actually went the other way around, and they went to League One, and they've been stuck there ever since. They've actually made it really far every time. And to your point, James Bench, once again, they will try and do it against Wickham. Amazing. Just amazing. Michael Lewis, final point.
Oh gosh, I've been just been thinking about this. Actually, I don't know why I thought about this last night. I lost sleep thinking about which direction I would go with this, and I'm going to steer very clear of Manchester United because I've been talking about them ad nauseum, and you know, my therapist once again says to not do that at the end of the show.
How much as I talk about Villa or James about Arsenal, but
okay. So my thing, just a general soccer consensus. I love this game, man. I love what this game has given us in 2021, 2022. I love the fact that on the final day of just about every league throughout Europe, there is something to play for from top to bottom. And I just can't wait for the weekend's matches. Can't wait for some of the matches in the Premier League this afternoon. But for this weekend, get your popcorn ready. I probably just keep it straight American. Budweiser, the American beer. Get your Budweiser ready if you're American. Get your Pabst. Get whatever Newcastle Pale. Get whatever you're drinking and enjoy the show.
I love everything that you just said, Michael, aside
enjoy
from
the show.
Budweiser. It's the worst.
I know. I'm telling you.
Do not listen to this man. There's so much better options out there. I know that James Bench agrees.
Sierra Nevada. That's what you want.
Jeez. No, but enjoy the show. This is a gift from the footballing gods.
Yeah,
the fact
absolutely.
That we get all of this. I just can't wait. And what a privilege it is we get to cover all this. So I'm chomping at the bit to get going over the weekend, but enjoy the festivities, folks. This may not happen for some time again, but I love it.
Well, I hope that you don't drink too many Budweisers on everybody else, because we have a weekend recap to take care of as well. After all these games are done, make sure to follow us live on Sunday. After all these games are over, we'll be talking about what just happened. And because it's live, you can throw in your comments and your questions. So it should be a good one. But as for this weekend preview, that is it. Make sure to follow James Bench on Twitter and CBS Sports as well. Michael Lahoud, Mike Lahoud on Twitter as well and Instagram. Thank you so much for being part of the family. LMH Garay, Qué Golazo Pod, CBS Sports, your CBS Sports app. We will see you next time. Enjoy the final days of the season in Europe and beyond. Till then, see you later.
CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.